What a pleasure to be sitting in for George Norrie on a Friday night into Saturday morning. Open lines on Coast to Coast AM. All right. If you like what you're hearing tonight, this morning, you might want to check out my weekly radio program. It's called The Conspiracy Show, and it airs live Sunday nights, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern, and in delay on about 40 affiliates across North America. For more information and a list of those affiliates, you can visit my website, strangeplanet.ca. Strangeplanet.ca. That's The Conspiracy Show. And while you're at it, you can also check out my podcast, Conspiracy Unlimited. Are you seeing a pattern here? Conspiracy Unlimited. New episodes drop every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. To listen and subscribe, just go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Back to more of your calls on disappearing and reappearing objects when Coast to Coast continues right after this. Let's go to the first time caller line and say hi to Chris in Austin, Texas. Hey, Chris, good morning. Welcome to Coast AM.
How's it going, man? Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to talk about the Revelation, Book of Revelation in the Bible. It's Revelation 18, and it speaks of a great city that falls. And I believe that great city is America, because it talks about how she, like, I can't read it quote for quote, but like it talks about how she, it refers to her as a she, and it says she becomes the habit, she inhabits the devils of the earth. I'm not sure if anybody, but I've just discovered this, and it's crazy. Y'all should really check that out.
Well, if it says a city, but America, of course, is a country, you'd have to be a little more specific if you're going to narrow it down to a specific city, don't you think?
Yeah, because, back in the day, Jesus didn't know about America. It says, so here he's referring to this place as the great city of Babylon, or Mystery Babylon.
Right, right.
Yes, and it says, Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, or death and mourning, famine shall be utterly burned with fire.
Well, some have suggested that was New York on 9/11.
And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her. And there shall she smoke burning of her.
All right, Chris, and do you think the end times are upon us?
Yes.
How definitely. Soon? How soon?
I couldn't say like a year or two, or it could be, I wouldn't say no more than 10, no less than a few years, because everything that Jesus has spoke about, the prophets are being fulfilled like this day.
All right. I'm just asking. I'm just wondering if I should, renew my 5-year mortgage. All right, Chris, thank you for that. Appreciate the call. Let's say hi to Eric in Indiana on the wild card line. Hey, Eric, how are you?
Richard! This is Eric, the mind control guy. How's everybody doing tonight?
Are you going to control my mind, Eric?
Oh, no, sir. I am a actual mind control survivor of military mind control.
That's different. Okay, you had me worried there for a moment.
Oh, no. From 1984 till 1987, I was an actual mind control test subject, and I'm one of the few that survived the mind-altering research study at Fort Bragg.
Were you a volunteer?
Oh, no. I volunteered to go in the Army, but I didn't volunteer to be a lab rat. No.
And what form did this mind control experiment take? What happened to you?
What they were doing is they were trying to perfect the various techniques as far as whether it be drugs or eventually microchips, which the mind-altering research study eventually graduated to the to Project MARC, which was the mind-altering relay chip, which in their years and years and decades of research, they were able to perfect, just like the caller in the one of the last segments, when he was talking about all this stuff they can do. Yeah, I can verify that. I lived it. As a matter of fact, when he said about putting microchips into people's eyes, I remembered that. That actually happened. They have the capability. They've been doing it for many years. And whatever you can see, they can see. And yes, they put us through a lot of very horrifying experiments as far as no fear. And what that was is the stuff that we went through in the mind-altering research study back in the day, the guys that would go through Army Ranger School or any of the tough guy schools, what I call tough guy schools, because you got to be one tough individual to do that. I mean, Navy SEALs, Army Rangers, Green Berets, all that stuff. And these guys would go through what they call a fear factor phase. And they would put you in all these really horrific situations to see what your fear factor is, because those guys, when they go out in the field, when they go on missions, they got to be able to handle themselves and be very level-headed. And so some of the stuff they did to us was, you know, one of the first ones I remember, I was laying down in what you might call like a box, okay? It was a large crate. And they had these long cylinder metal tubes filled with live spiders. And they would dump these tubes of live spiders on us. And every time before they did a test, they would say, remember now, no fear. Well, here's not too long after that, when I started getting my memory back, I was running onto these people at truck stops. And there's a lot of ex-military or former military in the trucking industry, and there's a certain amount of them are former Army Rangers, Green Berets, Navy SEALs, all these guys. And when I started telling these guys these stories, these guys would open up to me, and they were verifying what I was saying. And one of the first guys that did, he was a former Special Forces Ranger, and he said, yeah, they did that particular test to him. In fact, when they did it to him, they handcuffed him, because they don't want these guys freaking out. They're just testing their fear factor. But anyway, that's not the original reason why I called.
Right, because I was going to ask you, what does that fear factor test have to do with mind control? I mean, I understand they're trying to entrain the mind to, you know, to confront fear and overcome fear. But what does that have to do with microchip implants and so forth?
Well, that was the beginning. The mind-altering research study was like basic training for like mind control. In other words, they would put us into this sedative state, and they wanted to see how well their techniques worked, okay? And so they would put us in these horrific situations and say, remember now, no fear. And so they would tell us what to do, and they wanted to see if we would do it. Now, one of the tests involved what I call the Manchurian Candidate test, because in the old MK Ultra, that was one of the things they were trying to do, is take an ordinary man and turn him to an assassin without his knowledge.
Right. Why not pass the time with a little solitaire?
Yes, exactly. And so anyway, there was a movie that came out, I'm thinking it was in the 80s or 90s, with Michael Ironside, called Minefield. And they showed a guy in there when it was Michael Ironside's character when he was a young man, and they put him through one of the mind control tests. They slapped a gun in his hand, and they had this figure, and what it was the guy standing on the other side of the curtain, and they had a mirror tilted in a certain way, and, you know, basically told him to kill the guy, and the stuff didn't work on him. He came out of his sedative state, and he freaked out. He said, I will not kill. And I remember one of the guys in my platoon, when I was in that, they brought him in. They wanted to see if they could do this to him. And this particular feller, he was an actual full-blown Native American Indian who actually grew up in the Grand Canyon. And I was standing there, and I was watching him when they put him through this test, and they told him to, you know, pull the trigger, and his subconscious would not allow him to do that. And he said, I will not kill for you. And they really like got in his face big time, and, you know, and told him that you have to do it, and threatening intimidation in a very calm voice. He said, I will not kill for you. They said, well, he's going to be no good to us. So clean him out and take him back to his unit. He's done.
And now, you're missing time because you said you recovered your memory. What do you believe happened to you? What were you being used for during your missing time?
I was basically a lab rat. You know, I was one of the people that they did all these experiments on. And they kept pushing and pushing the envelope. There was days where I didn't know what day it was. I really wasn't sure what month it was. And as far as I knew, I was just going to work. And but, you know, there would be days where I'd be gone for a week or 2 weeks. And nobody would ask me where I had been. But I knew it's just like, what's wrong? It just, it didn't seem right, like I was missing time. But I just thought it was too much beer. I didn't know.
How did you recover your memory?
20 years, basically to the month, I started having a chronicled flashbacks of what happened. And I, even before that, I started having flashbacks that something real bad happened to me at Fort Bragg, but I didn't know what it was. And then in June of 2004, because they went to work on me in June of 1984, in June of 2004, I started getting a chronicled memory back of what happened. And I didn't know what I was remembering or why I was remembering. And then I started meeting people who were in either special forces or military intelligence. Military intelligence ran the project, and special forces was the security. Now, the main doctor that ran the project when I was there was a guy named Gorman. He was described as the twisted of the twisted. And these mind control doctors are absolutely twisted quacks. To this day, I do not like doctors, even though I know there's a lot of doctors out there that want to help people. They want to, you know, like if you're injured or something like that, that's fine. That's cool. But I really have a problem with doctors simply because all these doctors that did this stuff to us. And people talk about, you know, how they're so concerned with what happens to the animals. You people have no idea. You would be absolutely horrified as what was done to us under the cloak of, that's classified. I mean, I have a really, really hard time with classified and ultra secrecy because to me, someone who lived it and someone who survived it, it's like, you know, they are doing such criminal things. And the guys that didn't make it, that either ended up brain fried and ended up in mental institutions or died in testing, their families were told fairy tales about what happened to them.
And Chris, you survived. How are you today?
I'm fine today. I don't have them nearly like I used to. And matter of fact, I've come to learn that there's a lot of movies and things that I physically cannot watch because, let's just say, it'll open up Pandora's box with a writer's truck.
Would that be like the Bourne Identity and the Bourne Supremacy? Those types
of
films?
Like that. I can't even begin to watch them films.
Don't blame you. Don't blame you. Chris, thank you so much for the call. Glad to hear that you're sort of leading a reasonably normal life again. Let's see. Let's say hi to Laura in Youngstown, Ohio. Laura, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Lost Items. My husband and I sometimes play cards at the end of the day while we're waiting for our dinner to cook. And this just happened 3 days ago. We had just really started the game. He laid down the 8, 9, 10 of clubs. I hadn't had anything down yet, so there were no other cards on the table. He put a piece of newspaper over top as he was looking at that as well, picked it up a minute or two later because we were still playing the game. The cards disappeared. He looked at me and said, what did you do with my cards? I said, I didn't do anything with your cards. So he stood up, looked under the table, looked everywhere on the table, which there was nothing else on the table. The cards are not there. The 8, 9, 10 of clubs are not there. We looked everywhere.
And they were underneath the newspaper, right? They were under the paper.
They were underneath the piece of newspaper. So he obviously picked the newspaper up, put it aside, and we shook it out, whatever, nothing. So he picks up the whole deck of cards, and he counts them out, face down, 48 cards. I said, that's not possible. We have a whole deck of cards here, and three cards are missing. So he puts them down. We stand up, look around again, nothing. So I pick up the deck of cards. They're still face down. I didn't move anything. I counted them out, 52 cards. Okay, so he takes them from me. He goes, that
wait a minute. They ended up back in the deck?
Yes. Now, wait till I hear this. He picks the cards up, turns them face up in his hand, and he counts them out on the table, and right in the middle of the deck is the 8, 9, 10 of clubs in order, and we freaked out. I have goosebumps even thinking about it. It was so weird. Weird.
That sounds like an amazing card trick. Is your husband a magician?
No. God, no. No. He blamed me. He goes, what did you do? How did you do that? I said, I didn't do anything. I did nothing. I'm sitting here right with you. You can see me. I haven't moved. I haven't moved my hands. But they reappeared out of thin air. It was and in order, in the middle of the deck.
In the middle of the deck. Oh, my word.
I know. That's very, very strange. This is a very strange house we live in.
Well, that certainly beats the heck out of my lost and found wallet. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, no. Well, your lost and found wallet was important, too. But I could tell you stories about this house, but we don't have time right now.
Well, I got a couple minutes. What's going on in that house?
All right. Well, we were sitting at the same table a few years ago. It was Christmas time. Again, playing cards. We like to play cards. We have an outlet in the wall right behind my husband. When we plug the radio into that outlet, it's very difficult to get in and extremely difficult to get the plug out of the wall. Christmas music is playing. All of a sudden, the plug flies straight out from the wall and slams to the floor. He looked at me, I looked at him, and I said, oh, my God, what in the heck was that? Things disappear in here all the time. I'll lay something down, walk away for about 20 seconds or so, and come back to it. It's gone. Absolutely not there. So I wait a while. I come back to it a little while later where I put something, and it's there again. There's something in this house, and I don't understand, but
it's playing a trick on you. How old is the house?
It was built in 1948.
And how long have you lived there?
13 and a half years.
Okay. 13. Lucky yeah. 13. There you go.
Yeah,
and do you know anything about the history of the house, the previous owners?
Well, there was no death in the house, but a woman who did live in the house previously was elderly. She had passed out in the living room on the floor, and she laid there, I don't know, 4 or 5 days. Her daughter had come to the door banging on the door and couldn't get a result, so she went away. So about 5 days later or so, the daughter came back, I guess, with the police and found her laying on the floor. She did not die, but she was in pretty bad condition. But that's all that's really weird happened here, except for the stuff that happens to us. But my husband's brother died, my sister died, and my father just passed away a year and a half ago. So I think all these spirits are coming back.
maybe.
Yep.
And
yep.
Still, you're gonna stay in that house.
Yeah, I love this house. I'm not going anywhere. Let them go.
Well, as long as that's the only thing that happens is some playing cards end up where they should not to be, well, I suppose you can live with that.
Absolutely. It's benign, so we're staying.
It is benign. Laura, thank you so much for calling. Join my coast-to-coast colleague, Jimmy Church, tonight as he welcomes Edward Nightingale, independent researcher, author in the first half, to talk about the connection of the Knights Templar to the Giza template and the template's role in precisely concealing Templar treasure on Canada's fabled Oak Island. In the second half, Torah, Judaism, and Kabbalah teach us that we are not alone in our universe, or on our own planet. Rabbi Ariel Bar Tzedak details the long-documented record of encounters with entities not of this earth, from the secret teachings about inner earth and pre-Adamic civilized humanity to the many extraterrestrial races in outer space and their relationship to humans. That's Jimmy Church on Coast to Coast AM tonight. We'll get back to your calls on Open Lines when we return right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I began the Open Line segment talking about my disappearing and reappearing wallet, and the calls just keep coming in, so we just can't seem to shut it down. Let's continue along in this vein, and Sal on the wildcard line checks in from Carson City, Nevada, with a disappearing and reappearing object. Hey, Sal, good morning.
Taking my call, Richard.
My pleasure.
Yeah, I have two stories. One is 6 years ago, and the second one 5 months ago. The first one, very similar to yours. I lost my keys, and I chased them and looked and look here and look. I was out in the front yard looking for them because I probably lost them in the front yard. This was about the same time today after midnight. And I just gave up. I gave up looking for them. And about a week later, my neighbor asked me if, he said, I have some keys here. Do you think that? And my brain, you know, I had a senior moment, you know, and I just answered no, because I said, well, no, they're probably not mine. but the second story is, are you there?
Yeah, Sal, I'm just trying to make sure that we're on the same page here. These, what I'm talking about are objects that disappeared, and then you look in the same spot maybe 3, 4, 5 times, you know they're not there, but then suddenly you turn around and they reappear in that place you were looking.
Oh, yeah. Well, it happened 2 or 3 times. This was like the third time that happened. But this time, it looked like my neighbor had the keys.
He had the keys.
Yeah, he had the keys because he said, you know, I have some keys here, you know, and I guess I.
And were they yours, Sal? Were they your keys?
No, well that's the thing. I sort of had a senior moment, you know, and then I never thought about it. I just told them, no, they're not mine, you know, and I never saw the keys, but they could have been mine.
All right. I'm not sure we're talking about the same thing, but Sal, I got to move on, but thank you for the call. Let's say hi to Shirley in Birch Bay, Washington. Hi, Shirley.
Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a story about a ring that I had. It was a little pinky ring, a Yogo sapphire, which you cannot have. They don't dig them anymore. They're out of Montana. And I had that ring on. We went to dinner, and I came home, and it wasn't on my finger. So I called the restaurant 3 days in a row to see if possibly anybody had found my ring. I thought maybe it had fallen off in the restaurant. They had no ring. I looked out in the driveway. I never saw my ring. 2 years later, my boyfriend was out at the end of the driveway, and he reached down, and he picked this ring up, and he said, "Is this your ring?" I said, "Oh, my goodness." It had been there for 2 years. Cars had run over it. Rain. Snow, everything. And there was my ring. I was absolutely aghast at the fact that I had even, would even see it again. I figured I had just lost it for good.
It was hiding in plain sight.
It was hiding in plain sight. And let me go to just another subject for a minute. That young gentleman that called in that had been in the service, he had to have angels flying over him to go through what he went through and still be very, normal today.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
I am.
He survived an absolute nightmare.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And another thing, I was standing in an art store one day, and there was a gentleman standing behind me, very tall, long gray, mixed gray hair, pulled back in a ponytail. he had a lot of trouble seeing because he had a cane, but he looked at me and I turned around and I smiled and said hello, and he looked at me and he said, "You have the most beautiful gold ring over your head."
He was reading your aura.
I guess so. And I said, "Are you talking to me?" And he goes, "Yes." And about 15 minutes later, I was standing out in front of the store, and he came out again, and he looked at me, and he said, "Now you have a rainbow of rings along with the gold." And I just, it made me feel so good. And I thought, well, I guess maybe I've done something right in my long, long years of life. And I'm 83 years old, going on 83. And, you know, I don't think the world is going to end in 12 years. I've got too much hope for this world.
I'm with you.
Young people are, I can't understand them. I just don't understand it. So they've been taught that.
Shirley, thank you so much for the call. Yeah, there's an old, I'm trying to remember the name of the song. It's by a Canadian artist, and the line is, "My future's so bright, I have to wear shades." All right, let's say hi to Sonny is in Peoria, Illinois. Hey, Sonny, welcome.
Hello, thanks. I'm actually in Peoria County in a little village called Chillicothe. And I moved into a house about 4 years ago, and it was very active. A couple in their 90s passed away, not in the house, but the old lady was haunting upstairs and the guy was downstairs. And I had a air conditioner that went down and leaked water all over the basement. And I got it fixed, and a guy gave me a card for it. And it happened again. And I wanted that same person back. You know, he's really good. And I couldn't find the card anywhere. I told my wife about it. We searched the whole house for 3 days. We got the computer downstairs, and I searched the whole area, the desk, everywhere. And about 3 days after I searched the computer, I came downstairs, and the card was laying on the keyboard of the computer.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about, yes.
And then I had the guy come, and I ended up getting – we're going through some hard times. My wife's in college, and I'm working – not. I got my arms cut back. We ended up getting $25,000 worth of stuff for $4,000. New heater, new air conditioner, new whole house vent. The whole house, you know, just totally redone practically. And it's because that card ended up on that computer keyboard.
What a blessing. There you go. Someone was out watching out for you.
Yeah, definitely.
Sonny, great story. Thank you, and thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
David is in the Bluegrass State, beautiful Kentucky. Hello, David. Good morning.
Howdy, Richard. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
All right. It's a little bit of a different topic, but a couple months ago I was listening to you, and there was someone on there that was talking some biblical stuff, and you wanted someone to call in about reincarnation and someone that could biblically back it up.
All right.
I can do that. Without a shadow of a doubt, I can back it up 100%. To me, it's fact because our Father's been teaching me, not man. the reincarnation is, Jesus even talks about the reincarnation. It's talked about in the book of Titus that we all, to understand it, we got to understand that God said the covenant, when he made the covenant, was good for 1,000 generations. He's telling us right there, we've got to live 1,000 generations. A generation in Psalm 90 is 70 to 80 years long. So then we die and we fly away. I got so much knowledge that I'm getting ready to start teaching everybody. He's been teaching me one-on-one, hands-on training for the last 3 years. And now I'm getting ready to start a YouTube channel. I'm getting ready to start showing everybody. But I know you said that you wanted someone that could back to show that this reincarnation was real.
Right, but the passage you mentioned there about we'll have to live 1,000 generations.
Yep.
I don't know that that's specifically talking about an individual living 1,000. He's talking about a timeline. I mean, it could be interpreted. It could be it could be interpreted that way, but not necessarily so. I don't think that's definitive proof. I mean, I think the Bible isn't the Bible pretty clear. Listen, I'm not lecturing here. I don't know, but and I'm open to the idea. I mean, aside from having to sit through the ice capades again, I would love to be. I'd love to be reincarnated. But doesn't the Bible isn't it pretty clear that a man shall live once, die, and then be judged?
Okay. This is all right. Now, this is, like I said, he's been teaching me hands-on, one-on-one training. When a man dies, all right, first we got to understand that in the beginning of the Bible, in Genesis, in Isaiah, God says, I declare the end from the beginning. When in the Genesis, God says, man and woman shall twain together and become one flesh. Now, to jump over a bunch of stuff, my granddaughter is my mom and dad, okay? Now, through all this, when he said the covenant's good for 1,000 generations, he says we got to live 1,000 different lives. Like I said, okay, now Jesus even talks about regeneration of the Son of Man. In the book of Titus, it says, I'll just skip a lot, the most of it, but it's Titus 3:5. It says, not by works or righteousness, which we have done, but according to his mercy, he saved us by the washing of regeneration and renewing of the Holy Ghost. That is him. He's when we die, we fly away. And okay, when my dad died in 2003, okay, when he died in 2003, he didn't go to heaven, but he went up with the angels, which are placed a little above all of us. This is all explained in the book, the second book, The Father Had Me Write, we just published last October.
But again, I'm not hearing anything that you're saying that could be that couldn't be reinterpreted in another way.
What do you mean?
Well, regenerating the soul, that doesn't necessarily mean if I'm rejuvenated, that doesn't necessarily mean I've reincarnated. Let me give an example here about where someone might cite this chapter, 2 Samuel. It says, like water spilled on the ground, which cannot be recovered, so we must die. But that is not what God desires. Rather, he devises ways so that a banished person does not remain banished from him. Like water spilled on the ground which cannot be recovered. To me, that suggests we live once.
We do. The flesh only lives once. It's our soul that goes through the regeneration. Okay, this is where it gets tricky. In this book that the Father and I just published last October, it explains we've all been male, we've all been female, we've all been black, we've been Chinese, we've been Korean, we've been all nationalisms. We spend three or four generations as one heritage, okay? I'm assuming, I don't know. I know I'm white. I live three or four generations of this. That's what the Father's talking about when he says, I will visit the iniquity of your fathers for three or four generations. That explains how diseases and cancers, doctors think they're hereditary. It's because that soul is reliving, paying for the iniquity of a lifetime that they spent in the past.
Oh, no, I understand, you know, some of the philosophy behind reincarnation, and I've talked about it many times. I guess what I'm looking for specifically is passages in the Bible, and you've given me some, but I would contend that they could be interpreted in a number of different ways. You might be right, you might be wrong, I don't know, I'm just saying. Can you give me another one in the Bible that is highly suggestive of reincarnation?
Matthew chapter 19 verse 28, the words of Jesus Christ himself. And Jesus said unto them, verily I say unto you, that ye which have followed me in the regeneration, when the Son of Man shall sit in the throne of his glory, ye shall also sit upon the 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Those are the words of Jesus Christ. Now, in John 4, I believe it's verse 24, don't quote me on that, I'm not looking at it right now, but I believe that's where Jesus says, those that worship God must worship him in spirit, for God seeks those that will worship him in spirit.
Okay.
Bible is all spiritual, 100% spiritual.
Well, of course, but it, well, okay, but again, I don't see that necessarily pointing to reincarnation. I mean, again, it's open to interpretation.
What does regeneration mean? What is a generation? What is a generation?
To regenerate. Well, for example, Jesus also talks about, you know, being born again. But what does he mean by being born again? He's not referring to reincarnation, I don't believe. He's talking about born again in, you know, being born again in your spirit being born again in Christ.
In the spirit realm. In the spirit realm. I have physically been born again. To be born again, all right, think of being born as a child right now. A child comes into this world with absolutely nothing. To be born again, we have to, as Jesus says, if thou wants to be perfect, sell all that thou hast, give your alms, give to the poor and needy, and follow him in the spiritual realm.
Well, we're going to have to regenerate this conversation on another show. Listen, I appreciate the conversation. We're out of time, and maybe we can pick this up on another occasion. If I'm so blessed to do another Friday, would love to hear from you again. I'm enjoying this conversation. Sadly, we are out of time, but thank you so much. Thanks to all of you. And for George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyon, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galanti, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and here in Toronto, Mike Ben Dixon, Robert Turner, and Patrick O'Neill. I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. Until next time, so long for now.